storyteller. We're celebrating Cousin Thelma this month, this year, at the Folk Festival. And Cousin Thelma was the director of the Florida Folk Festival for many, many years. So we're very happy to talk about her all through this festival. And after we have, be sure and stay a while if you can after our next story time, because we're going to have a story swap. And if you have a story you want to tell, it'll be your chance to tell it. So you be thinking a little bit while you're listening to this next storyteller we have. That's John Jury from Boone, North Carolina. So please listen up. Clean out your ear wax and listen up. Okay, John.
Thank you very much. How many of you here think money is important? Okay, well, I'm here to tell you that as I stand here with a beard on my face, money's not important. And the reason I know that money's not important is because, you see, before I was 21 years old, I was a millionaire, and before I was 21 years old, I lost my million. Now, maybe what we should do is go back to the beginning and explain a little bit of that. You see, when I was a young man, I was a real cowboy. I was an honest-to-goodness cowboy, just like you see in the TV. I rode a horse, and I chased cattle, and I used a lariat, and that's what I did for a living. In fact, what I would do is I lived in Texas at the time. After I got out of high school, I went down to Texas and got a job as a cowboy. And my job was to ride on cattle drives. And I was to drive cattle from Texas up to Kansas, where they would then be butchered, put on great big trains, and shipped all over the United States. And that's what I did. One year, I was on a cattle drive. We drove the cattle up, all the dust and the dirt and all this kind of stuff. We drove them all the way up to Kansas. A long way. It took a lot of time. And when we got to Kansas, the cattle were bought by the big meat packing plants, and I was paid my wages. And I had a lot of money for being young. And the first thing I decided I wanted to do was take a good hot shower, because I'd been on this trail and I'd been riding these smelly old horses and I was dirty and all this kind of stuff, and this had gone on for a long time. So I got a good hot shower, and then I decided I really wanted a good meal. We'd been eating a chuck wagon and all this kind of out the back end of this thing. We'd been eating beans and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, I wanted a really nice meal, a fancy meal. So I went to the fanciest French restaurant in Kansas City. I walked in the door, and the guy had a tuxedo on and a bow tie, and he, yes, sir. And he had a menu that was like the thickness of a Bible. And he sat me down in a chair in the front of a table, and it had all fancy linen over it, and had four or five glasses for different things and a whole bunch of silverware that I didn't know what to do with and all this kind of stuff. And he handed me this menu, and I start looking through it, just page after page of fancy foods, most of which I didn't know what word and could hardly pronounce any of the names. And I got about, I don't know, halfway through this book, and they had a list of soups. And I remember looking at that menu with all those soups on it, and one caught my eye. Turtle soup, $4 a bowl. $4 a bowl for turtle soup? Well, the man came over and said, "Yes, sir, what would you like for dinner?" And I ordered my meal. And while I was ordering my meal, I said, $4 a bowl for turtle soup? He says, "Oh, yes, sir." He says, "It takes one turtle to make a bowl of soup. And that's why it takes $4 for a bowl of soup." And this was a long time ago when $4 was a lot of money. Well, he took the menu away, and I was sitting there, and they brought my food and everything like that. And I was thinking, $4 a bowl for a bowl of soup. They probably pay about $2 a turtle for that turtle, and then they make $2 out of the deal. And I'm thinking, $2 a turtle. Now, I live in Texas, and I know where there are all kinds of turtles. Thousands of them. See, they get turtles all over Texas. They're called terrapins. Now, out in the desert of Texas, they're all over the place. And I thought, now, if I got a few of those turtles and brought them up here, I could sell those things for $2 a piece to this restaurant, and I'd make some money. So I went back down to Texas after I was done in Kansas, and that's what I decided to do. I got out there, and I built myself a corral. And I started bringing turtles into this corral. I brought them from all over. And by the time I was done filling up this corral, I had 20,000 turtles. And they were all in there crawling around and everything like that. Well, then my problem was how to get it to Kansas. Well, I didn't have any money. I'd spent it all up in Kansas, bought myself a new cowboy hat and some cowboy boots. And the only thing I really knew how to do was to drive cattle. And so I decided, well, what I'll do is drive the turtles to Kansas just like I drove the cows. And that's what I did. I opened the corral gate, and I herded those turtles out. You know, and herding turtles is kind of neat. They don't leave a trail of dust. And we did really good. We made 40 yards the first day. Took us 3 days to get out of this corral. And we got finally out of the corral, but I began to understand there was a bit of a problem. Because at the end of the day, I'd get all the turtles around in a bunch, and I'd get ready to go to bed, and they'd start wandering off. And that was a real problem, so I had to stay up all night and kind of bring them back. Otherwise, I was going to lose my turtles. And after a week of doing this, I was getting mighty tired. I mean, here we were herding, you know, 30 or 40 yards a day, and then at night, I was having to keep them all in place so they wouldn't lose them. One day, inspiration hit me right here, in the sore spot, right side of my head. Why don't I, when we get all ready to put them to bed at night, just flip them over? And that's just what I did. I turned all 20,000 turtles over on their back. It worked like a charm. I went to bed that night, crawled into my sleeping bag, woke up the next morning, and the sun was coming up over that herd of turtles, and all their little fins flapping away like this, you know? Hadn't lost a one. It was great. So we were off in a semi-cloud of dust the next day. We were up to speed. We were making about 50 yards a day, so we were doing pretty well. Then I began to realize the next couple of days that we were dropping in speed. We'd gone down from 50 yards down to 40 yards the next day. A couple of days later, we were down to 30 yards, and I realized we had a problem. I mean, if you're only doing 30 yards a day, you're not going to get to Kansas anytime in this century. So I decided I better investigate what the problem was, see if I could figure it out. And I looked at the turtles, and you know, these turtles weren't used to being herded all across the country like this. They weren't used to doing all this walking. And they had sores on their flippers from doing all this walking. Well, I rode into town and explained my problem to a blacksmith, and he told me that he would make turtle shoes for $2 a turtle. And he'd shoe all my 20,000 turtles. Well, I didn't have any money. I couldn't afford $2 a turtle for turtle shoes. Little steel, little horseshoe things. I couldn't afford that, so I decided I'd go down to a hardware store. And I bought myself a big, big box of fence staples. Barbed wire staples. They're like staples that you have in school and things like that, but much bigger. And I got myself back to my turtles, and I put a staple through each flipper. Now, yeah, it hurt a little bit. Them, not me. But the pain went away in just a minute like that, and after that, they were okay. And man, once I had their staples on, man, they made a good time. We were up to 1,000 yards a day. I mean, we were really making time. But we herded at a thousand yards a day. We heard it all through the spring and all through the summer and all through the fall, heading towards Kansas. We got late in the fall, and I realized it was starting to get cold and rainy and miserable. And these Texas turtles were from down in the desert where it was warm. And I realized that this bad weather was going to kill them if I wasn't careful. So I decided the thing to do was to dig a hole and bury them all so they could hibernate through the winter. And then the next spring, I'd dig them up and we'd take off. And that's just what I did. I buried all these turtles. And then I went off and did something else. And the next spring, I dug them up. And you know, when you bury turtles and they hibernate, little boy turtles and little girl turtles do what little boy turtles and little girl turtles do. And the next year, I had all kinds of little baby turtles along with the other. And I had 40,000 turtles. Man, I was at $2 a turtle. I was getting rich in a hurry. So we took off like a herd of turtles, worked all the way through that spring, all the way through that summer. I mean, Kansas is a long way away. Worked all that fall, and the next fall, late in the fall, buried my turtles again, all 40,000 of them. And the next spring, dug them up, and I had 80,000 turtles. Man, I was getting rich. This was so great. Well, when it all boiled down, you know, year after year I did this, and then my turtles kept getting more and more. And finally, I dug up my turtles one year, and I had 500,000 turtles. I had the biggest turtle herd in the world. Yeah. That's $1 million I was worth. I was a millionaire, and I wasn't even 21. Man, I was home free. And that year, that was the year we'd gotten close enough to Kansas City that we were going to make it to Kansas City that year. I was a millionaire. We herded through the spring and into the summer. And finally, one day, all that separated me from my million was a river that we had to cross to get into Kansas City. And once we crossed that river, my turtles and I was a millionaire. Home free. So I rode up and down that river to find a shallow spot where I could run these turtles across, and I finally found one. And I drove my turtles into the river. And that's where I made my one mistake. That's where I lost my $1 million. You see, like I told you, these were terrapins. These were Texas turtles. These were from the desert. Not one of those turtles knew how to swim. Every one of those 500,000, my $1 million, sank and drowned. And that's how I made and lost my million before I was 21. When I was a young man, I was at a particularly awkward age. I was, was it that bad? What did I say, guys? They flush in and they flush out. You know, the tide comes in, the tide goes out. Huh? Yeah. Otherwise, he's going to drive me crazy. So they talked about it for a little while, and they decided that the thing to do would be to send me to my uncle's for part of the summer. Now, my uncle owned a pretty good farm, big, large farm, about a day's drive from where we lived. So they called him up and explained the problem, and he said, sure, glad to have him for a while. Make a farmer out of him. He had a couple of daughters that were just a little bit younger than I was, so I'd have somebody to play with and everything like that. And no problem. So my parents told me about it. For the next month before school got out, I really looked forward to this. This was going to be exciting. I had been to the farm before, but I'd never gotten to be a farmer. We'd only stayed for the day. So about a week after school got out, Mom and Dad packed my suitcase, got me into the car, and we took off one morning. It's about a day's drive. We got there in time for dinner. We had dinner. Mom and Dad stayed overnight with my uncle. The next morning, we all had breakfast together, and then Mom came up to me, and, oh, John, you know, behave yourself, have a good time. Yeah. Yeah, Mom, sure, fine. Yeah, go. I'm a farmer now. Go. And Dad came up, and he shook my hand and said, now, you work real hard. Yeah, Dad, go. I'm okay, everything's okay. So they got in the car and took off, and let me tell you, being a farmer that summer was as much fun, was as neat, as cool as I had imagined it would be. I mean, I had so much fun.
I mean, first of all, I got to feed the cows. I even got to milk a cow. Oh, that was something. I got to feed the hogs. Oh, well, that wasn't so nice. I got to feed the chickens, and they pecked at my legs like chickens will. And I even got to drive the tractor. Sitting on my uncle's lap, I was up there driving that tractor. Man, this was so cool. I loved it. Had a great time. I'd been there, oh, a couple, 2-3 weeks, I guess. Can't remember exactly how long. When one morning I was sitting at breakfast with my uncle, the rest of the family, my uncle said, "John, as soon as breakfast is over, you and I are going to get in the pickup truck and head to town." The pickup truck. I mean, this pickup truck was a farm truck. It was a cletty, cletty, bang, bang, boom, boom, you know. And this was an old, beat-up old truck, and it was neat to ride in. Yeah. Didn't even have to wear your seatbelt because they hadn't been invented yet when this truck was built. And so I got in the truck, and I thought maybe once we get in town, I could buy some bubble gum or some candy or something like that, because I hadn't been in town since I'd been there. And we got in the truck and headed into town. And as we were heading into town, my uncle explained what we were doing. He had just bought a new field adjacent to his farm. It had been logged over, but the stumps were still there. And he was wanting to turn this into a pasture for his cows. And so we were going to go into town and buy a couple of cases of dynamite. And we were going to go back and blow these stumps up. Dynamite. Now, I was an expert in dynamite. I knew all about dynamite, even though I was only 10 years old. I mean, after all, I had seen every old cowboy movie on television. I had seen every Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote cartoon, and I knew all about dynamite. And the most important thing I knew about dynamite is that all you had to do was look at it. I mean, after all, Wile E. Coyote, that's all he did, just look at it, it would blow up in his face. And now, I didn't want to seem like I was a little bit nervous. I mean, after all, I was a big grown-up, 10 years old. But I explained to my uncle that maybe it would be okay if I didn't ride the pickup truck home that day. Maybe I could walk back to the farm. Well, he understood, because he was a smart man. He understood that I was nervous about riding with the dynamite. He explained to me the real truth about dynamite. Because dynamite, it turns out, really isn't dangerous at all under normal circumstances. You can light it with a match and it'll burn, it won't blow up. You can drop it and it won't blow up. You can throw it at people or things or whatever and it won't blow up. You can hit it with a hammer, for that fact, and it won't blow up. The trick is that to put inside the dynamite, you have a blasting cap. It's about that long, about the thickness of a pencil. You put a fuse in the blasting cap. You put the blasting cap in the dynamite, light the fuse. When the fuse burns down, the blasting cap will blow up. And the blowing up of the blasting cap is what blows up the dynamite. And that's when you get the big boom. So he explained that if you keep the blasting caps and the dynamite apart from each other, you're okay. So I decided I wouldn't walk home after all. I'd ride my truck. So we got into town. We bought a couple of cases of dynamite, just like he said he would. We got a bag of blasting caps, which he very carefully put under the front seat by where he sat, and a big spool of fuse. You know, big fancy stuff that looks like string, stiff string is what the fuse looks like. And so we headed back home. As soon as we got home, we went out to the field. And my uncle showed me how it all worked. He got a stick of dynamite, put the blasting cap in, put the fuse together, lit the fuse, put the dynamite under a small stump, and we stepped back, and that dynamite went boom! And that stump just flew up in the air and just landed over here, just so neat, did a beautiful job. We did a few stumps like that, and then we got to a little bit bigger stump, and he got 2 sticks of dynamite, put the blasting cap in, lit the fuse, boom! And that stump just rose magnificently up in the air and just landed over here, just so neat. Well, after I'd had a chance to watch him for a while, he let me light a fuse. Oh, this was great. And my stump, when the dynamite went off, whoo, rose up in the air and just landed over just so. Well, the rest of the day, we went through the field blowing up stumps. He would let me light a few, and then he would do a few. Around about 5:30, it came to be dinner time. We got back in the pickup truck. We still hadn't gotten rid of all the stumps by any means. We got in the pickup truck. We headed back home for dinner. We had dinner, and then after dinner, I went outside. I got a stick of dynamite, and I got a fuse. My uncle was no fool, remember. He had put the blasting caps away where I couldn't find them. And with this stick of dynamite and this fuse, which I lit with a match that I had grabbed, I chased my little cousins all around the yard. And it was so neat because they just screamed. Oh, it was just the reaction I wanted. They were terrified, and I was having so much fun chasing these little girls around the yard and showing how brave I was. But they screamed a little too loud. And my uncle heard them. And he came out to find out why his two daughters were screaming. And there I stood with a stick of dynamite with a fuse burning in it. Well, he looked at me, and I got two things out of that. First of all, I got a couple of singed, scorched fingers from lighting the fuses. And second of all, I got a good yelling at him. My uncle really yelled at me. And then he sent me to bed early. But it was okay, because the next morning he forgave me. He was a nice guy. And he forgave me, and at breakfast he said it was okay. And that we could go back out and we would blow up some more dynamite. So that was okay. And as we were going out in a pickup truck, I told him about a neat idea I had had. See, the night before I'd had to go to bed a little early, and I couldn't get to sleep. So I lay there in the bed, and I had this great idea come to me. I said, what would be really neat is if I sat on one of those stumps when the dynamite went off, and the stump and I would just raise up in the air and just land over here. Just so neat. And I called it my magnificent run. I thought this would be a magnificent. And I was real excited and real impressed with this idea. Unfortunately, my uncle was not as excited, nor was he as impressed. And his answer was a one word, no. Well, we got to the field, and as he would stick a dynamite under a stump and light it, I would suggest that maybe this would be the stump that would be really my ride. No. We'd go to the next stump. This would be a magnificent stump. No. We worked our way down through the field, him lighting fuses and me being told no. And as we went through the day, I began to realize that we were starting to run out of stumps. And so my suggestions were getting a little bit more frantic and a little bit more pleading. And it had been a long day, and I was starting to get on my uncle's nerves. And so the no's were getting a little bit firmer, and I was not getting any closer to my magnificent ride. Finally, we worked down to where we were almost out of stumps, and we had one great big stump in the corner of the field with a few others around. My uncle went up to it, put two sticks of dynamite underneath, lit the fuse, and I suggested this would be a stump to ride. No! We stepped back, the dynamite went off. Boom! But the stump didn't rise in the air. It didn't move. It was too big for the two sticks of dynamite. My uncle went up and looked at it. My uncle's the kind of guy that if two sticks of dynamite don't do the job, he skips right over 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and went right to 10. So we had a big bundle of dynamite like this, put the fuse and the blasting cap into it, but this time the fuse was a big, long fuse. He went up and where the original dynamite had gone off, he put this big bundle of dynamite into it. And I suggested this would be the stump for me. And he immediately told me two things. One was no and shut up about that stump ride. And two, run. And that's what we did. We ran, because he had 10 sticks of dynamite. And we ran way back. And about the time we turn around to see what's going on, that fuse burns down, hits the blasting cap. The blasting cap goes off. The dynamite explodes. Woo! Well, let me tell you, that stump did not rise magnificently in the air and land over here. As far as I know, that stump didn't rise in the air at all. I mean, sure, there were little lumps of stuff flying all over the place, but I never saw that stump again, so I don't know where it went. We had a big hole. We had lots of dirt flying around in the air and these little clumps of stuff. But I never saw that stump again. And you know, the rest of that day, actually for the rest of the time I was a farmer that summer with my uncle, I never once, not even once, mentioned my magnificent ride. Thank you very much.
I am a storyteller, and if you on the back want to come and sit up here on the floor, you can. Just have a seat. You know, telling stories is cozier to sit on the floor, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. You can really get into it that way, can't you? All right. Where y'all from? What school?
Jacksonville.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm from Jacksonville, too. All right, this is a time in the program that we have opens Cousin Thelma's Story Time, we call it. Now, Cousin Thelma used to be the director of storytelling, director really of this whole festival for many, many years. Well, she died last year, and this year we're sort of dedicating the festival to her in her honor. Now, I wonder, are there any storytellers out here who have maybe a 5 or 3 minute story? Do we have any storytellers? Do we have no storytellers? I don't mean lies, I mean stories. Do you have a story to tell? Well, we have one in the back here. I bet you could come up and give us maybe a little short story? Oh. You have one? How long is your story? Big? Well, you want to tell your story first? Is it a teeny tiny story?
I'll take it after her.
Is it real long or short? How many minutes? Okay, we'll see. Come on, Diane. Yours won't be real long either, so maybe there'll be enough time.
Well, I think I'll tell you a story about a wide mouth frog. Y'all like frogs?
No.
Yeah. No, yes? Well,
no.
This was a small wide mouth frog. He was a baby frog, and his mom said, "Don't get out of my sight." You've been told that, right?
Yeah.
Well, just like you, the little frog didn't pay any attention. Little frog decided he was big enough to go out and explore the world all by himself. So he took off adventuring, hopping down the road singing his favorite song. Wide mouth frog, wide mouth frog, how very great it is to be a wide mouth frog. He came upon this creature he'd never seen before. It had 8 legs. It was just kind of crawling along, and he said, "Hi, what are you?" "I'm a spider." "What do spiders eat?" "We eat bugs and flies and things like that." "Oh, I'm a wide mouth frog." He hopped on down the road singing his favorite song. Wide mouth frog, wide mouth frog, how very great it is to be a wide mouth frog. He came to another creature. This one had 4 legs. Was all furry, little bitty ears, long tail, and it purred.
Cat.
"Hi, what are you?" "I'm a cat." "What do cats eat?" "We eat mice and rats and things like that. Oh, I'm a wide-mouthed frog. He hopped down the road singing. Guess what he sang? His favorite song. Guess how it went? Wide-mouthed frog, wide-mouthed frog, how very great it is to be a wide-mouthed frog. Very good. You remember the part we left out, didn't you? Well, he hopped on down the road, came to another creature. This creature had two legs, covered with feathers,
a bird,
and could fly. Hi, what are you? I'm a bird. What do birds eat?
Worms.
We eat worms and insects and things like that. Oh, I'm a wide-mouthed frog. He hopped on down the road singing, wide-mouthed frog, wide-mouthed frog, how very great it is to be a wide-mouthed frog. He hopped on down until he came to a creature that had no legs.
Snake.
Long and skinny.
A snake.
Hi, what are you? I'm a snake. What do snakes eat? We eat rats and mice and wide mouth frogs. Oh, wide mouth frogs? You say wide mouth frogs? Oh, I haven't seen any wide mouth frogs anywhere around. I think I hear my mother calling. I'm going home. And he hopped on back home very quickly, singing his new favorite song. Small mouth frog, small mouth frog, how very great it is to be a small mouth frog. And that's the story of the wide mouth frog. Thanks.
And those of you who just came in, if you want to sit up front here, you can sit up here on the floor. If you've got plenty of room up here on the front.